أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم استغفر الله ربي وأتوب إليه ربنا لا تزغ قلوبنا بعد إذ هديتنا وهب لنا من لدنك رحمة إنك أنت الوهاب صلوات بليز.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
السلام عليكم my dear brothers and sisters. Zakallah for this humble opportunity. Well, the title was not set by me, so you can't blame me that it's a long title, but I just want to define it and what it actually means. When we say people's rights, we basically mean that all of us, all human beings, regardless of our religion, our culture, our ethnicity, and our gender, have basic or inalienable dignity which cannot be taken away by a state or by you or by me. And when we talk about a state's rights, we mean that a state has the right to regulate a society. Do we not believe that? Today, if there were no traffic lights or if there were no police system, society would be into chaos. So we accept that both have rights. And my question is this: is it correct to say that both of these things should be against each other? I actually want to quote Ayatollah Khomeini as to why he initiated the revolution, the actual act in itself. The rest of the speakers have talked about the consequences of the revolution. What did Ayatollah Khomeini actually say? He says, and I quote, and this is in the Wilayat-e-Faqih, he says, it was to prevent the establishment of monarchy and hereditary succession that Hussein revolted and became a martyr. It was for refusing to succumb to Yazid's hereditary succession, that means succession by virtue of family, and to recognize his kingship, to succumb that Hussein revolted and call all Muslims to rebellion. That means Hussein revolted because Yazid only had a right to his kingship by being virtue of a family member. And the same applies whether I am part of a religion, am part of a gender, and part of a culture. I am not Iranian, and some of you, most of you are Iranian perhaps. So if the revolution is Islamic, it has to apply to me, yes or no? That is maybe why I've been invited or not. So it means if Khomeini's act transcends Iran, it has to be relevant to the young generation and to me, whatever background I am, or you living here, to the young generation as British Muslims. And I want to pose you this question: can we overthrow the British government? Is it valid for us to do so or not? If we are talking about revolution here today, what revolution are we talking about? Why, and why did I quote Ayatollah Khomeini's statement? Why is his statement relevant? It is relevant, going back to Hussein alayhi salam. The relevance of the revolution is not necessarily anything particularly to do with religion or culture. It is to do with morality. Because Hussein revolted, why? To rectify the affairs of his grandfather and Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. To exhort people to what is right and wrong. Amra bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar. So the relevance, arguably, of such a revolution is today, if you see, and I'm a PhD student myself, so if you see student fees being hiked up to £8,000, or you see an unjust rule, an unjust policy, whether it is an Islamic country or not, whether it is here or not, if you see the action being unjust, then that is Ayatollah Khomeini's message. Because he quotes, going back to Hussein, that Hussein revolted because Yazid's kingship was immoral. That is how Ayatollah Khomeini's revolution transcends other things. But then I argue this, wasn't his revolution the same as Gandhi's, as Martin Luther King's, as Malcolm X's, as the People's Revolution in Cairo against Mubarak? What is the difference? There is no difference. Because both were revolting against a dictator and his immoral policies. So today, the question is, as young Muslims living in Britain, whatever culture or region we are from, how can we best learn from such noble actions and noble revolutions? One revolution which has not been generally quoted, and the scholarship both in Hawzas and Islamic studies in the West is extremely poor, unfortunately, and that revolution is a revolution of Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Salawat, please. He witnessed, what did our fourth Imam witness? He witnessed his father being murdered. He witnessed his family being murdered. He witnessed the women being tortured and enslaved. And so what happened? What treaties did he produce and what kind of revolution did he produce? He produced Risalatul Huquq, a treatise of rights which was expressed in the 7th century, compiled some years later. He talks about the revolution of the self, Huququn Nafs, which means that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has the greatest rights against us. But then the fourth Imam says in Risalatul Huquq that your nafs, yourself, has a right against you. How? This hand of mine has a right against my body. My tongue has a right over me. My stomach has a right over me. My private part has a right over me. What does this mean? It means today, any leader, any one of you, whether we are leader or not, whether we are a Muslim leader or not, we have to make sure that this hand does not terrorize, that this tongue of mine does not backbite, that this private part of mine does not go into adultery, that this stomach of mine, I don't know what food is served afterwards, but this stomach of mine does not overeat. It means the true revolution, which arguably Ayatollah Khomeini was going for, was the revolution of the self. It means he was trying to tell people, if you are going to remain in power or you are going to revolt, make sure that you do not terrorize people, or you as people living here in Britain do not hike up fees, or if we're living here, we do not force each other into things that we should not be compelled with. And we say, La ikraha fi din, there is no compulsion in religion. And there is no compulsion in anything else. The true revolution is this. Today, as one of the earlier speakers said, and he left, and he made a very valid point. He said, what guarantee is there that if Mubarak leaves, which he has left, what will happen afterwards? Will there be a person, a leader? Will there be people acting on the ground who are going to be just to themselves and just to other people? It is not about the political act of the revolution, nor the social act, nor the act within the region. It is whether that leader, whether people on the ground are going to actually respect the biological tools they have been given with. And that's why Zainul Abidin said, we have no Yazid anymore, but make sure a Yazid does not come back. Salawat. I want to conclude in the next two, three minutes on this point. What kind of revolution can we bring to our lives as young British Muslims living here? Arguably, we're all living here. This is a fact. There's a fact on the ground. I propose four things. One, today if you look at the culture, everybody speaks of right to privacy, of my freedom of speech, of my religion, that my religion is superior to yours, of my rights as superior to yours, that when I am in a particular culture or region, that is superior. Although, of course, that is not the Ahlul Bayt's wisdom. Today, maybe, we can argue that Zainul Abideen can be a force for change in this society and even in international law. If you look at international law says what? That I have to respect your privacy. I have to respect your dignity. Now you tell me this. If today a terrorist like 7/7 or 9/11 was to blow themselves up, is he respecting any law? Is he respecting Ayatollah Khomeini's revolution? Is he respecting the law of the country? No, he's not. A leader of a Muslim country, any country, whether it's India, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, if a Muslim leader here in any party, tell me, if that leader does not respect his own biological tools, which Zainul Abideen says, his hand, his tongue, who knows that he can backbite? Who knows that he can play politics? Tell me, what revolution is there? The true revolution is the revolution of Zainul Abideen, he says, and he transcends British law, our fiqh, our Muslim law. He says that the true revolution is to respect those biological tools. Let me quote to you something and then I'll end. He says, salawat please. Zainul Abideen says, the right of your subjects through authority is that you should know that they have been subjects, a leader, his subjects have only been made his subjects. Why? Tell me something, why should you be listening to me just now? Basically, you've been sat here and you can't move. But actually that's the point of the Imam. He says, a leader is only powerful because it is through the subject's weakness that the leader gains strength. Hence, it is obligatory upon a leader to act with justice towards his subjects and to be like a compassionate father towards them. You should forgive them their ignorance and not hurry them to punishment. And you should thank God for the power over them which He has given you. Why did I say Jazakallah for the humble opportunity? It is not my God-given right to speak to you. It is only by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's means or by the organizers that I have been given this right. And you tell me this, when we administer punishments or when we have compensation in fiqh, even anything to do with fasting, whether it's 60 fasts, you tell me this, does the factor of compassion come in the derivation of law and whether the leader institutes his policy? This is something, unfortunately, as of yet, our both Islamic and even British interpretation has not taken into account. And I end with this. Zainul Abideen's true value and what I believe Ayatollah Khomeini was inspired with was the revolution of the self. Something expressed in the 7th century AD and before that As-Sahifatul Madina, the Charter of Medina by the Prophet. This was before the Magna Carta and before the Human Rights Act 1998. This is something for us to reflect over. Jazakallah.